For $9 billion worth of stocks between the beginning of February and the end of last week. Jeff Bezos sold the most of the executives, 3% of his Amazon shares worth $3.4 billion. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by an amazing team, most of whom who are working from home to protect themselves and the community. Democracy Now! Is an amazing team of committed producers and staff. Thanks so much to Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Nina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Rina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, Adriano Contreras, Maria Tarasena, Julie Crosby, Dennis Moynihan, Miriam Barnard, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira. Special thanks to Becca Staley. Juan Gonzalez joining us from New Brunswick. I'm Amy Goodman in New York.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8 a.m. and 11 seconds right there on the dot. Coming up next is Wednesday Talk Radio as soon as we work out some technical difficulties here. And I mention that because I'm saying, hey, I'm having a hard time calling in to our hosts and our guests. So if you're listening out there, Paul Roland, your host of Wednesday Talk Radio, Paul, give me a call here at the studio. Help me out a little bit. In the meantime, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we just want to let you know that we're currently closed to all in-station and volunteer and visitor activity until at least April 12th. And while our airwaves are still live, all in-station classes and meetings are canceled for this month. But we are still conducting all of our meetings, especially our board meetings, through Zoom. So go ahead and go onto our website at kboo.fm and look at our board of directors page, and you'll be able to find all the links for our upcoming committee and board meetings. KBOO values the health and safety of our community and is taking operational precautions to do our part to flatten the curve. More information on KBOO's efforts to combat COVID-19 can be found at kboo.fm/COVID-19. And we'll be right back with you with Wednesday Talk Radio. Guess what, Wednesday Talk Radio fans? Guess who is on the line with us on the phone? Paul Roland, are you there, host of Wednesday Talk Radio?
I am, Jenna. Thank you so much.
All right, Paul, everyone, the time is 8:03. It's time for Paul to take it away.
All right. Well, as everyone knows by now and is increasingly aware, this pandemic is a multi-dimensional crisis that is affecting everybody more and more, and we at KBOO are struggling in our way to keep up with it and to keep people informed and hopefully organized to deal with it in the best way that we can. So as we know, as this pandemic just keeps worsening, as there's an almost complete lack of coordination at the federal level, which has forced those political leaders at the state, county, and municipal level who get the seriousness of this pandemic to have to fill the void with clearer stay-at-home orders, event and business closures, eviction freezes, and the like, and unfortunately have to scramble for resources made scarce by longstanding neoliberal policies and the inherent flaws of a capitalist economy. And of course, as you heard last week on my show, and I think the day after on Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, there's a widening, there's more and more mutual aid networks started by people in communities around the nation that are also filling the void by getting volunteers to deliver food and other necessities to people who are unable for various reasons to leave their houses. And there's people who are sewing masks for the because there's this ridiculous shortage of medical supplies because of, I don't know, is it politics that they're playing? I heard that Pence just, it seemed like, if I heard it correctly, and amongst them, lessened the number of ventilators that were going to be sent to New York City after Cuomo complained vociferously. Anyway, it's the nuttiness that we were already experiencing under Trump has been magnified many, many times. So, with all that said, it's also showing up all the flaws in our social, political, economic system, and it's showing this conflict between protecting the economy. What is the economy? And protecting people. It's growing more and more. So people are organizing various ways. Here in Portland, something that I happened on as I'm getting, you know, my Facebook feed and such, is a proposed rent strike. And we're going to hear all about that with my guest, who I think should be on the line now, whose name is Randall, who's with a recently formed coalition called PDX Rent Strike. Are you with us, Randall? I guess not yet, but he will be soon. He's calling into the station now, I believe. I can't give Jenna his number over the air. Anyway, hopefully he'll be calling into the station and is listening to this show. So, yes, I can read a little bit about it. I don't know enough, as much about it as he does, so I don't really want to get into it. But as people know, there's been eviction freezes called in Portland by Mayor Wheeler, in Multnomah County, and most recently statewide by Governor Kate Brown. So that's one thing, and I think there's people are going to have 6 months to pay back what they're if they weren't able to pay their rent. But this the rent freeze people are talking about goes beyond that. So do we have Randall yet?
Not okay. Yet. We're still waiting for your guests to call in. So, Randall, if you're out there, go ahead and give us a call at 503-231-8187. And Paul, I'll try giving your guests a call. I kind of think this is interesting to be doing all this remotely. People are getting a little behind the scenes of what it sounds like when we're in studio. So just hang on there in just a minute. I'll let you know in status in about a minute.
Yeah, and if you can text me, I can text you his number.
All right. Okay, we'll do. Actually, I have the number here on the magical spreadsheet.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thanks, Jenna. And we are revealing our processes for all to see here at KBOO. It's interesting. I noticed myself getting really nervous as I was waiting for the show to start, which I usually don't. I think there's something about I'm just so used to being in the studio with that microphone that I don't know, just is calming. So anyway, everybody, you're with us, Randall.
I am.
Good morning. Good to talk to you. How are you? How are you bearing up under all this?
Well, you know, I've been dealing with the shift in my schedule by keeping myself busy with organizing. You know, keeps the mania and the mental health in order to find ways to keep myself busy.
And that's something that a lot of us are dealing with. I've been hearing reports that calls, mental health distress calls and the like are increasing. So it's hard on everybody. What we're talking about here, I don't know if some people might think this is, you know, that we've got enough to deal with in dealing with just the basic day-to-day health concerns and logistics and people being out of work, that why are we talking about this this idea of a rent freeze? So maybe you could talk about what your group is proposing. What is a rent freeze, and maybe also how it relates to the eviction freezes that have been passed.
Right. So I just want to start by saying someone at the beginning stages of this was calling for a rent freeze because they thought that meant not paying rent. We are in fact calling for a rent suspension. The vocabulary difference is subtle but important, because a rent freeze just means you're not allowed to increase the cost of rent. What we're calling for is in fact a rent suspension, which is the relief of rent payment for the duration of this epidemic. And the main reason for that at this point, Paul, is because there are millions of Americans who overnight have found themselves unemployed for a duration that they're uncertain of. And these Americans deserve to be spending their what little money they have on them, what little money their job gave them as a separation paycheck, what have you, on their personal health, on making sure that they are safe, that their needs are met, rather than paying what little money they have, if they're even able to, right, to a landlord who is demanding that their schedule of payment remains unaltered by this epidemic, right? And that's completely unacceptable. I think we can all agree to sit there and demand that people who have no means of income, who are being forced to stay home for the general good, and we should be staying home, right? Like, this is an important thing that we're doing. We all agree that we all need to be at home, if at all possible. To still expect people to be paying thousands of dollars just to not become homeless as a result of the virus ripping through our country is it's silly at a certain point, don't you think?
It's something that we're all we're all so used to these basic building blocks of the way the capitalist economy works, like rent, property, dividends, interest, these things we just sort of take for granted or kind of naturalize. But yeah, I think it might be a step for people to think about what it all actually means, why some people are able to, own property and impose rent on other people. That's a big question that you're not necessarily bringing up right now. But yeah, I think that's something that we're going to have to struggle with. But one question is there's many, I'm glad you put out that thing about the difference between rent freeze and rent suspension. That's important. There's a lot of other subtleties and complexities. Just a couple that spring to mind. One is, you've got different kinds of landlords. You've got big corporate landlords that we've focused on a lot on this show, some of whom you can't even know who they are because they're like shell companies and stuff.
Right.
And then you've got people who might own one or two properties. Are you making any distinction there?
So the big distinction that our groups have been arguing is that we're arguing that landlords have to take care of themselves, right? So if you're a small landlord and you have two or three properties and you find out, oh, all of the six tenants I have in my two or three properties are unable to pay rent or unwilling to pay rent this month, then you need to take that burden to your bank, right? Push it up higher. There are already a number of banks that are offering very public mortgage forgiveness for, I think, the longest one, although of course there are nuances for each of these. There's a bank that publicly offered a 12-month mortgage relief package for large investors, right? So there are banks that you can go to as a landlord, but I, as a tenant, should not be having to organize for your best interests, right? We should be organizing for the interests of of the working class, and then the landlord class needs to be organizing for their own best interests. And I think at this point, the best interest for a small landlord is to join the side of this rent strike and say, hey, like, I can't pay my mortgage either. You, the bank, need to do something about this. You know,
so you're focusing on mortgage, obviously, because that's really the big expense for certainly for small landlords. That's like the main thing that they need to get the rent in order to pay that mortgage. Then there, you know, there's also maintenance and all that stuff, but the mortgage is like the big expense.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Well, I just want to let people know, Talk Radio, I'm Paul Rowland, the regular host. This is the fourth Wednesday, so I'm on my own. The other three, I generally have a designated co-host or co-hosts. I'm on the line with Randall, who's with an organizer with PDX Rent Strike, and we're talking about a movement. And actually, we haven't said that. Another question is the April 1st that you're talking about doing it for. Now, is that like starting on April 1st and going forward, or are you just
right.
trying to organize everybody for April 1st?
Right. So obviously. Different tenants will have different rent due dates. For example, my rent is due on the 5th of each month. We chose April 1st because after a lot of roundtable discussions about timelines and about how we can best organize, we decided that there are people who cannot pay their rent right now, right? There are people in Portland right now who as a direct result of COVID-19 are already unable to pay their rent. So a big portion of this rent strike for us is organizing defensively for the people who just physically cannot pay their rent, right? It is our job to stand in solidarity with these individuals in our community who they can't make the end meet right now. So the April 1st deadline for us is really about saying, like, hey, there are people right now who can't pay their rent. There are people right here, right now that need help. And if we allow, it's a lot like flattening the curve, right? If we allow individual people to fail making their rent payments, they will be picked off. They will be evicted. But if we stand together, already we have numerous buildings that are already organizing together to present collected grievances. Like, hey, we're on. There's a building that I'm aware of that has 15 people in it, and all 15 people have agreed they're not paying rent this month, as an example.
Okay. So
and there are dozens of these instances happening across the city, right? And so. It's really moving very quickly, which I'm very excited about.
So obviously you're talking about Portland specific, and you're not now talking about a broader effort or linking up with other cities or areas.
The exciting thing is that we started this thinking about Portland, but you know Portland has really forged this reputation over the last I would say. 8 to 10 years of being sort of the place that people look to for radical organizing. You know, we initiated the occupation of ICE back in 2016, 2017. So a lot of eyes were already on Portland when we took this move. So I know people in New York, I know people in Kansas who unpromptedly are taking the same materials that we are producing to help Portland renters organize themselves, and they're distributing these things in other states. I've seen messages to our page from people as far away as France telling us that they like what we're doing, that they're excited about what we're doing. So I think there's a lot of movement going on. There's a lot of coalescing going on across not just the city and the state, but also the country. People are kind of waking up to this.
Well, thank you for all that. That's really exciting. I don't know if it's my phone or if you're doing something on your end. You kind of do a gentle fade in and out. I don't know if you need to hold the phone more in one position.
Okay. I can try and be a little more conscious of my microphone. I'm sorry.
Okay, no worries. So this is a talk show. It's also a call-in talk show, and I haven't given out the number yet. We already have one person on the line, which we're going to get to in a second, but the number is 503-231-8187. I'm on the phone, and I have Randall on the phone, so we have one line open. That's the way our system is at KBOO. So Dom or Don is on the line. Are you still there?
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Dom. I'm a member of Portland Tenants United, an organizer with them. We are like the citywide tenants union. I'm calling in just, you know, because I've seen a lot of people talking about a rent strike, about organizing in their buildings, their homes. You know, this is a moment for that, right? When we're told to stay in our homes, we start thinking about, you know, what is the right to housing and how do we secure that? I just want to say, you know, like, I love to see the organic things popping up. But I'd hope that PX Rent Strike, Randall, your folks would be willing to reach out to us and collaborate on organizing, because we are calling for a similar demand, right? April amnesty is what we're starting with. So the forgiveness of rent for the month of April in Portland. We already organized the eviction moratorium, started that, you know, about 2 weeks ago, and it's gone to statewide now.
Absolutely. We're really focused on one of our party lines, TM, is that we don't want people asking how they can join the organization PDX Rent Strike, but we want people asking how they can join the rent strike in PDX. So absolutely, we're very much focused on a decentralized structure for this organizing, and we would love to work alongside really anyone who's trying to organize for the defense of Portland's renters, et cetera. Our page is always open to messages. If you're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we have all of these social media accounts open specifically for the purpose of receiving requests for aid, receiving people asking. We've had people ask for hundreds and hundreds of flyers to just give their neighbors over the last couple of days, and we've delivered, I think, something in the range of like 3,000 flyers to people just driving around town and giving people 50 to 100 flyers at a time, so that they can distribute those to their neighbors, to their buildings, to their neighborhoods, what have you. So yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to work with you guys, and I'd love it if you'd be able to reach out to us.
Yeah, I just the example you gave of 15 people in a building. I mean, that's like the perfect start for, you know, a long lasting tenant union, which is what we do, right? I helped found a tenants union on 52nd and Division over the summer, and it's 20 units, and all 20, you know, that they formed a union and they served to demand the landlord and won some rent concessions during construction. And so this is a moment, right, like, not just for the rent strike in my mind, it's for, you know, like, building that structure of you know, like, a renter's like political structure, right? Whether it's just in your building, you know, citywide, like, where renters' voices are heard when people are, you know, when we're developing the city, when we're doing X, Y, and Z, there will be, you know.
Absolutely. And that kind of ties into something that we're looking at as well, which is that we're not trying to just organize in the short term. We're trying to build something that has the strength to last through May, through the end of this crisis. And rather than a return to normalcy at the end, we want to come out of this with stronger tenants unions that are more able to stand up for our collective rights and so on. And sure. That's like that's a really big portion of what we're focusing on with our organizing, is getting people into the space of getting to know their neighbors, of getting getting these unions started and off the ground, so that we can begin building. If you start with one building and then you go to two, and then you have a city, and then from there you're reaching out to other cities. The networking that we're doing is really exciting, and we're looking forward to how that grows over the course of the next month or two or three. So we're very excited about the directions these are going. And I think you and I are looking in very much the same directions in what we see with the momentum and trajectory of how this is all evolving.
But exactly. If I may be so bold, and I don't want to necessarily divert the conversation into a more complicated political discussion, but I do sense that there might be some political differences possibly in the approaches you're talking about. And I just want to flag that as a possibility and say that maybe this is a crucial moment to actually start really looking at seriously and working out those political differences as we move forward.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, for us, it's... go ahead.
Right, and I don't know if it's so much political differences, maybe like... a difference in our tactics for the moment, right? Like Portland Tents United, we're not calling for a rent strike. You know, we've organized rent strikes in complexes and buildings before, but we're not currently calling for like all the renters of Portland to rent strike, like as an organization. What we're calling for is rent amnesty, right? Suspension of rent for April, specifically starting there. But similarly to what you said earlier, Randall, was we're saying, you know, it shouldn't be the renters who are means tested. It should be the landlords who are means tested in terms of rent assistance. No renters
right.
should owe rent. It should be the landlords that apply for aid to pay their mortgages, essentially. Because there are a lot of landlords that have paid their mortgages outright. You know, every month they collect rent for your profit. There are other landlords that aren't that way, but I think that's the main difference in this moment that I'm sensing.
Yeah, and from a purely tactical perspective, I recognize that the history, our organization recognizes that very much the history of rent striking is built on building by building solidarity. It's built upon small, like a single building winning concessions from a single landlord, et cetera. And it's a direct result of the material conditions of this moment that we think this is even possible. If you were to ask me 2 months ago, hey, do you think you could organize a citywide rent strike? The answer would have been no. There's no way that you have the momentum. There's no way that you have the attention, what have you. But as a result of the material conditions of this moment, I think we've had an opportunity sort of force itself on us in a lot of ways. Because if we aren't organizing this, then come May, there will be a massive spike in homelessness, not just in Portland, but in America, right? Like It's really disgusting to think that in one of the richest countries on earth, this pandemic is going to leave more people homeless and bankrupt than it's going to leave people dead. Like that's disgusting and terrifying to think about. And so it's almost like our hand has been forced here to go big or go home. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, listen, thank you for calling in, Dom. I would like to, this is a great discussion, but we only have one line, as I mentioned, so I'm going to have to let you go at this point and open it up. We have half an hour left, so thank you for calling in. I really appreciate that.
Much.
I know I'm not really a party to this organizing, or even I'm not close to these circles, so I don't actually know, but I just have sensed over the weeks and months that there are these differences in tactics, and I think these are important things. It's good that you guys are talking, and that these are going to continue. So 503-231-8187, you mentioned houselessness, and of course that's another big area that we can't get deeply into. There's now they've opened up the convention center. There's some criticisms of whether that's a good space, a healthy space for people. There's people now, they're calling on houseless people to shelter in place, which is an odd thing. But at least, this, if nothing else, this is leading to a suspension, seemingly, of sweeps, which is a good thing. But of course, you know, some of those camps, people are camped pretty close together, and they probably hang out pretty close, so they're going to, you know, need something more than just that. Anyway, if you want to respond to that, and I've got Joe, hang on, Joe, for just a second. Go ahead and maybe talk about what I just was saying.
Yeah, no, I think the mention of our unhoused neighbors is a really important mention, because I think they're going to suffer like the most from this COVID outbreak. I think that they are at a massive risk, right? The convention center is not, in our opinion, a viable solution. It's an open air space where you're just sort of hoping that this disease doesn't spread from cot to cot. Meanwhile, across the street from the convention center is the massive Marriott hotel they just finished building specifically for the convention center. That's empty. And so it's interesting that we refuse to allow these folks what might be considered comfort in these times, right? And the convention center is being used specifically as an overflow shelter because our primary shelters are required by the CDC to space their beds out more. So these measures are very much half measures that we're still going to see our homeless community members suffering as a result of this outbreak. And I think it's very important that we highlight that, hey, you know, these are members of our community, and they are very much at risk, and we need to be thinking about their safety. And that's a big portion of what we're advocating for as well, is you know, that the extension of care to our unhoused community members is so important in fighting this outbreak, right? Because you can't expect to minimize transmission rates if you still have people who don't have a place to sleep at night. It's not how diseases work.
Well, listen, again, 503-231-8187. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host by remote, Paul Rowland, from speaking from my home in Montevilla. And looks like we got another caller on the line. Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate you making that point about the convention center versus the hotel across the street, but I wanted to make a point about the calls for a rent suspension, and I don't know whether PTU's call for amnesty is kind of nudging in more of this direction, but if all that is really happening is that the rent is being put off and there is an ongoing obligation to catch up with that, that is
right,
going to have the same catastrophic effect, and that
we need
to, in a way, like, call for not just kind of leeway in the property relation. We need to call for like a real cut in what it can expect of society. And I just
absolutely
wanted to make that point.
I wholeheartedly agree with everything you're saying. One of the big issues we have with this moratorium is that the current moratorium that our governor has put in place gives no timeline for repayment. It gives no relief past the end of May. So essentially what we are going to see, if things remain the way they are, is we're going to see a lot of people not able to pay their rents. And then we're going to see a lot of people immediately getting evicted, and we're going to see a bunch of other people struggling even more than they already were to catch up to this thing, right? And it's amazing the way the individualization of this responsibility sort of works, right? Where the individual renters are expected to catch up to this economic crisis, whereas these landlords just sort of expect business as usual to continue for them. And you're right, we don't want a temporary suspension. We don't want rent debt. One of our big talking points is no rent debt, right? Because we shouldn't be putting working class people who are already struggling, who are already making paycheck to paycheck decisions, we shouldn't put them in a situation where now you have to pay your $1,200 rent is now a $1,400 rent so that you can pay off last month's over the course of 6 months, right? Like, that's not an effective solution, and it's what our governor is offering us right now, and it's simply not enough, and it's going to leave Portlanders homeless. Is what's going to happen.
Okay, and one last point. In addition to the hotel across the street from the convention center, there are well over 10,000, over 15,000 by the last report I heard, empty just apartment units, not even hotel units, that in large part are owned by speculators and large property owners that, like, don't have an interest in collecting rent from it, and so there's no reason to not have people in those buildings too.
Yeah, absolutely. There, there has been a disgusting ratio of empty houses to homeless folk in Portland for years. I think the last I heard, it was something like 4 empty dwellings for every homeless person in Portland. And if that doesn't make you sad, I don't know what kind of a person you are. But 4 empty houses for every homeless person in Portland is, it's insane, really. That the only reason these dwellings are empty, the only reason these folks are unhoused, is because it's not profitable. There's no money to be had in housing these people, and that's it. That's the only reason we're allowing people to suffer on the street, is because it's not profitable to do anything else. And yeah, absolutely. We need to be talking about that. We need to be loud about that, because these are our neighbors. These are our community members. As much as capitalism would try to convince you that these are unwanteds or what have you, no, these are your neighbors. They live here. They're in your community. They are people. They deserve to be housed. And we have the capacity to do it, and we choose not to. And that's awful. And I think, yeah, we need to be talking more about why are there these huge towers in the center of the city that you see all the lights on in this building at night. There's no one in that building, you know. There's no one there. It's 2 a.m. and all those lights are on. No one's in that building. It's purely there to look good for some speculative investor, like you were talking about. And it's awful. It's absolutely awful. So yeah, we do need to be focusing on our unhoused comrades. And there are people that I've been in contact with who are acquiring masks and food and going around and making sure that they are delivering, like, clean water and breathing masks, et cetera, to try and help our unhoused communities with this disease. But it's these are the folks that are going to be hit hardest, and these are the folks that we need to be worried about their health and their safety the most, and yet people talk about it the least. So yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that up.
Thanks for calling in, Joe. Again, the number is 503-231-8187. We have about 20 minutes left. You're listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your regular host, Paul Rowland. I'm on the line with Randall, who's with the PDX Rent Strike 2020, and that's what we're talking about today. So yeah, on the subject of the speculative, that's again something we've covered a lot on my third Wednesday show with the Portland Assembly crew about this the rise in speculation on rent, which is one of the drivers for especially the building boom, and then the low occupancy rate of these buildings, because they're just speculating on the bundling the rents together anyway. So yeah, one thing is the massive amounts of offshore pools of money that are held by some of these hedge funds and others that occasionally is talked about. But those are huge pools of capital that could be seized upon for resolving some of these problems in this crisis. Anyway, another thing that I've been paying attention to is some of these people who are actually occupying some of these empty buildings, mostly individual homes. I know in San Francisco there's some people who end up being able to actually buy the house, which is remarkable. It's a small but important victory, and then some people in LA are doing that. I haven't heard of anything here locally, but if you have heard of anything, please let us know at 503 231-8187. Looks like we got another call, so let's just go straight to Daniel. Go ahead, Daniel. You're on the air. Hello, Daniel.
Sorry. I'm a tenant at American Property Management, and I was a server while this crisis hit. And I lost my job. Tried to get unemployment. Didn't work. Tried to talk to my landlord about it, and I was met with like threats. It's a really messed up situation. I just heard about this rent strike the other day on Facebook, and I saw that that y'all were providing like a toolkit and trying to help people organize in situations like me. I just have a question of like, how can I convince people, like my fellow tenants, how can I help get them on board with me about this rent strike, to convince people that even if they can pay rent, that like we need this rent strike to for people like me to keep surviving in this system.
Right. I would say that first off, it's exactly people like you, Daniel, that are going to make this rent strike possible, because it is very much like this decentralized process. We need individuals who are willing to talk to their neighbors. We need individuals who are willing to organize their buildings. So absolutely, these are important questions. We have a number of toolkits available that I think you've already seen at least one of, that help you to understand how to talk to your neighbors. There's a lot of frequently asked questions, et cetera, that we have listed out for you. But one of the big ones that I would focus on in your situation, especially being with American Property Management, which is a big company here in Portland that owns like a number of buildings, I would focus on the idea that this strike really is the only way that you can enforce your rights as renters to mitigate your risk of infection and to ward off the threat of eviction. And tell these folks that, you know, even if they're able to pay rent, they know someone who can't. Guaranteed, they know someone who isn't able to pay rent, and framing it as standing together with those people, I think, is your best bet. And just there was another person at a different, I don't know if it's a different American Property Management or not, but there was a person at an American Property Management complex who just put out a bunch of letters in the rent collection box that just said, hey, I can't pay my rent. If you can't pay your rent, reach out to me and we'll figure out things together. And they got 10 people basically overnight messaging and calling them, being like, hey, I also can't pay my rent and I'm scared, right? A lot of people can't pay their rents and a lot of people are scared. So just letting people know they're not alone, letting people know that you're here with them, is a really big first step to getting people comfortable with the idea of standing together.
Okay. And if I needed to like have someone walk me through this, is there like, would I be able to get a hold of you guys?
Yeah, you can message our page, which has active social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of that. Anywhere that you would feel comfortable reaching out to us, we've been fielding messages left and right from people exactly like you, just trying to figure out, okay, what's my first step? What's my second step? You know, how do I get involved here? And again, our big thing that we want people focused on is not how you get involved with this organization, but how you get involved with helping to strike this April, right? So absolutely, we would be more than happy to hear from you in that regard.
Okay.
Great.
Well, thank you, Daniel.
Well, thanks much.
Yeah. Happy to hear from you, Daniel.
All right, and again, this is a Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland speaking with Randall with a PDX Rent Strike 2020. If you're tuning in just now, maybe you could just run down really quick what it is you're doing and what you're calling for and where you think is going.
Right. The biggest, most important demand that we have is no rent, no rent debt. We're arguing that the withholding of rent at this time is not just something that is important but necessary for the continued well-being of the Portland metropolitan area. Like, we really want to see people coming together over this, and we think that this moment has sort of provided a spark that has really, really resonated with a lot of people. So we're excited to see where this is going, and we're excited to see where we end up in the next couple of months with this, because we're definitely building for long-term movement potential.
Okay. I got a message actually from Dom, who just Facebook friended me as we're speaking, and also suggested that Daniel can get in touch with the Portland Tenants Union if he needs advice in organizing his building as another way to go. So, Daniel, that's another resource, Portland Tenants Union. And I got a message. I'm not sure if Mara wants to come on the air or not, but she wants to know how people of color are being included in the rent discussion.
Absolutely. We're working with, amongst several other organizations, we're working with the African abolitionist parties, et cetera, which are working towards unified socialist African states. And we're definitely trying to ensure that marginalized voices are being heard in this. There is one of our big priorities right now for the long-term organization is to be building defense networks to provide eviction defense. And so one of the big things we're doing is asking our marginalized comrades how we want to go about defending the folks who choose to strike, defending the people who put it on the line and say, "Hey, I'm not going to pay rent, and I'm not going to pay back rent. What are we able to do for these folks?" And I don't feel comfortable talking too in depth about those steps, but there are definitely people focused on that, and there are definitely people asking the same questions, and we are.
It looks like. Looks like Mara is actually on the line, so maybe she could just explain more what she wanted to say. Go ahead, Mara.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think just it's really important to know that people of color are actually leading this effort, just because the risks that folks take to do this kind of action are just a lot greater. And so unless you're including folks who have sort of like the most to lose, it seems like it's not going to be really as effective or wide-reaching, or you're not going to really like reach everybody unless people really know and trust that, like, yeah, they're going to be protected somehow. And so that's
right.
All and, I wanted
and,
to know.
And protecting our
now.
And protecting our vulnerable community members is 100% what this organizing is about. And I really appreciate you bringing that up, because absolutely, that's 100%. On our plate right now is figuring out how different people in different places of privilege and risk and vulnerability have different opportunities to participate, if that makes sense. Those people who have more privilege, it's really their obligation to step up and try to put themselves in the line of fire, et cetera. And so a lot of what we're organizing right now in terms of defense coming for May, because all these evictions are going to come at the tail end of May. So we have a couple of months to organize about this, but we are definitely putting thought right now into how do we defend our communities? How do we put the people who have the least risk in the most risky situations, and how do we defend one another effectively? And I absolutely agree that we need to be asking these questions. There are a number of queer folk, there are a number of people of color, there are a number of marginalized folks of various identities who are working very hard to make sure that the most at-risk voices are being heard in this organizing. But yes, it is important. I really appreciate that you're bringing that up, because so often in these kind of things, those voices go overlooked, and it's not acceptable.
Okay, we have about 10 minutes left. You're listening to Wednesday Talk Radio. We're talking about a proposed rent strike starting April 1st here in Portland and perhaps beyond. And I'm talking with Randall, who's with this a coalition of people that are have a Facebook group and are organizing under the banner of PDX Rent Strike 2020. I just want to have one quick question before we go to Harry, who's our next caller. If you could wait a second, Harry. So I think I saw somewhere, you know, because obviously there are people who are able to pay their rent, and I think people were even calling for maybe to those people to join in solidarity and put their rent into some fund. Is that true?
I have not seen in any of the spaces I have not seen in any of the spaces that I'm organizing a specific fund that people can donate to. I know that there has been discussions about forming one of those, but there's the constant question of accountability, right, security, safety, who has access to these funds, and so on. And this is definitely something that's being organized, it's being discussed, but at this point, the best way for someone who has rent money to participate at this time, I would say, is to set your rent money in your savings account, tell your landlord you don't have it, and then stand in solidarity. And when May comes and your landlord starts getting really militant and you become uncomfortable, you have the ability to walk it back if that comes to that, right? Because you set it aside in savings. So for a lot of folks who have the ability to pay their rent, there's a really low risk opportunity for you to stand in solidarity and say, no, I'm not gonna. And then if this all does go sideways in some regard, the moratorium prevents the addition of late fees, et cetera, until the end of May. So come the end of May, you can reassess your decision to stand beside us if you have set that money aside for yourself.
And of course, the bigger context of this is people who listen to KBOO, Democracy Now! Especially, have been hearing how, you know, in the discussions for some of these big bills that are being going through Congress, which just passed last night, and I understand that the Democrats did actually fight for some concessions on things like giving pay to workers who are at work and some other issues. I don't think anybody really knows exactly what's in there, but there's a lot of fear that it's just going to be, you know, a big bailout, just like in 2008 for the big banks and such, which is kind of part of this sort of neoliberal shock doctrine, which happens, you know, during big crises like earthquakes and superstorms and now pandemics. And so people are putting these kind of initiatives forward as a sort of reverse shock doctrine, where the people actually get to weigh in on how we actually deal with crises, not from the top down, but possibly from the bottom up. With that, we have Harry on the line. Go ahead.
Greetings, everyone, and thank you for taking my call. Most landlords do not take partial payments. Is there would you maybe agree that maybe the city council or the state should pass a law saying that landlords must take partial payments?
I would argue that that is a concession that seems unstrategic at this point, because there are a lot of folks who won't be able to make any sizable payment. You know, if my rent is $950 a month, and I've been furloughed for 6 weeks. I work in the event industry, where I've done events in the convention center, et cetera, and the landlord taking half of my rent is still going to be, you know, the rest of the money I have in my bank account for who knows how long, right? So I think more so than taking partial rents, we should be talking about why landlords are exempt to the economic pressures of this virus, right? If everyone else is hemorrhaging cash flow, why is it that the landlord class is exempt from that hemorrhaging, right? I think we should be focusing instead on a total alleviation during this rent pressures during this crisis, so that people can spend their money caring for their personal health, caring for their own well-being and needs, right? Because I imagine that if you were to pay your landlord the partial amount you're able to, you wouldn't be able to afford instead the various care goods which might help you stay at home longer, which might help you stay healthier, et cetera. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. Happy to have you.
Okay, 503-231-8187. You just got a couple minutes left. I noticed since I'm looking at it right now, I'll just read these if you don't mind. There's some broader demands that actually it says that there's a rent strike if the following conditions are not met. We haven't actually said that. And so there are free health care, free testing, treatment, and care for all people, no work, suspend work obligations, and guarantee food stamps and sick pay for all, no payment, no debt, suspend rent, mortgage, utilities, loans, foreclosure, evictions, and parking enforcement, free the prisoners, end bail for jail, deactivate ICE, release detainees, and stop all sweeps of homeless camps, and open all unoccupied houses to those in need. Quite a sweeping set of demands. You want to talk a little bit about that as you wrap up, because we only have 3 minutes left.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, you know, there are... This list of demands was originally forwarded by CareStrike, which are some folks who were really militant about these are the things that need to be done in order to flatten the curve. And we recognize that these demands won't be met, if that makes sense. The direct action alone is intended to force the system to take the steps that it's able to, but we highly doubt that you know, Governor Kate Brown is going to step up and release inmates. But this is what has to happen, right? This is a list of things that have to happen in order to flatten the curve of this COVID-19 thing. And really, the demands that matter here are implicit in the action of withholding our rent money, right, with the intention of not paying it back. It's less of a demand and more of taking what's ours, if you will. These demands are an expression of what we believe needs to happen, but not an expression of what we believe the state is capable of providing.
So Brian is on the line, but I don't think we can go to you, Brian, because we really literally have 2 minutes left. And I just wanted to give Randall, who's talking about the PDX Rent Strike 2020, a chance to once to say again, like, how people can get in touch with you, and other means. You know, you're handing out flyers. How can people push this forward?
So on the PDX Rent Strike Facebook page, there are a number of printer-friendly toolkits that you can print out. If you have any questions on how to organize your building, you can reach out to PDX Rent Strike or to the Portland Tenants Union, Portland Tenants United. We have a number of folks who are down to deliver flyers. We are organizing some phone banks here later on next week. Any aid that you're able to give, any signal boost that you're able to give, the more ears this reaches, the more quickly, the more people we'll be able to protect together.
And I assume the handing out of flyers, people are obviously following all the hygienic protocols in doing that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have an entire one page toolkit on suggested techniques to avoid contaminating flyers that you're handling, to avoid.
And do you have sufficient hand sanitizer and stuff in your group, I assume?
Absolutely. We have okay. We have our own, but as this is a hyper decentralized movement, we encourage people to be using their own as well when they're doing their organizing for their individual buildings, etc.
And of course, there's the COVID-19 Mutual Aid Network, which you can also find on Facebook, that are delivering such necessities to people that can't go out and get them. Thank you, Randall. We got to close up shop for today on Wednesday Talk Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a bunch for having me, Paul. Appreciate it.
All right. And that's it. Turn it over to Jenna.
And you are listening to KABU Community Radio. Oh, look at that. The time is almost 9 o'clock. Oh, I'm off mic. The time is 9 o'clock right there. Coming up next, all the public affairs programming that you love here on KABU Community Radio. So keep that dial tuned in. But as some radio stations are saying right now, don't touch that dial. And if you do, don't touch your face. Wash your hands. So thank you so much for tuning in to KABU Community Radio, your community radio station.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.
It's really just the community we live in, and it makes it a better place. If you look at Hillsborough,